Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 16, entitled Lord Parashuram Destroys the Ruling Class. We're reading from text 25 to 31. We'll read text 25 first. Jamadagyo api Bhagavan Rama Kamalalochana Agamini Antare Rajan Varta Yesyati Vai Brihat. Translation: My dear King Parikshit, in the next Manvantara, the lotus-eyed personality of Godhead, Lord Parashuram, the son of Jamadagni, will be a great propounder of Vedic knowledge. In other words, he will be one of the seven sages. Reading from text 26. Ashtedyapi Mahendradro Nyastadanda Prasantadi Upagiya Upagiyamana Charitaha Siddha Gandharva Charinai. Lord Parashuram still lives as an intelligent Brahmana in the mountainous country known as Mahendra. Completely satisfied, having given up all the weapons of a Kshatriya, he is always worshipped, adored and offered prayers for his exalted character and activities by such celestial beings as the Siddhas, the Chanaras and the Gandharvas. Text 27. Evan Bhrigushu Vishvatma Bhagavan Haririshwara Avatirya Parambharam Bhuvohan Bhuso Nripan. In this way, the Supreme Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord and the Supreme Controller, descended as an incarnation in the Bhrigu dynasty and released the universe from the burden of undesirable kings by killing them many times. Text 28. Gadir Abhun Mahateja Samadhi Iva Pavaka Tapasa Shatram Utsrijya Yo Lebhe Brahma Varchasam. Vishwamitra, the son of Maharaj Gadi, was as powerful as the flames of fire. From the position of a Kshatriya, he achieved the position of a powerful Brahmana by undergoing penances and austerities. Now, having narrated the history of Lord Parashuram, Shukadeva Goswami begins the history of Vishwamitra. From the history of Parashuram, we can understand that although Parashuram belonged to the Brahmanical group, he circumstantially had to work as a Kshatriya. Later, after finishing his work as a Kshatriya, he again became a Brahmana and returned to the Mahendra Parvat. Similarly, we can see that although Vishwamitra was born in a Kshatriya family, by austerities and penances, he achieved the position of a Brahmana. These histories confirm the statements of the Shastras that a Brahmana may become a Kshatriya may become a Brahmana or a Vaishya, and a Vaishya may become a Brahmana by achieving the required qualities. One's status does not depend on birth, as confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam by Narada, 7.11.35. Yasya yallakshanam proktam pumso varnabhi vyanjakam yad anyatrapi drishyeta tat teneva vinirdishet. If one shows the symptom of being a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra, even if he has appeared in a different class, he should be accepted according to those symptoms of classifications. To know who is a Brahmana and who is a Kshatriya, one must consider a man's quality and work. If all the unqualified Shudras become so-called Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, the social order will be impossible to maintain. Thus, there will be discrepancies. Human society will turn into a society of animals, and the situation all over the world will be hellish. Text 29. Vishwamitrasya chaivasan putra eka satam nripa madhyamastu muduchanda maduchanda maduchandas evate. King Parikshit, Vishwamitra had 101 sons, of whom the middle one was known as Maduchanda. In relation to him, all the other sons were celebrated as the Maduchandas. In this connection, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur quotes this statement from the Vedas. Tasya hi Vishwamitra Mitra Yasya Kasatam Putra Asau पंचसाद एव जया जयांसो मधुचंदस पंचसाद कानी यमस। विश्वामित्र हैड 101 सन्स, 50 वेर ओल्डर देन मधुचंद एंड 50 यंगर। टेक्स्ट 30, पुत्रम कृत्वा सुने शेपम शेपम देवव्रतम देवार्तम च भार्गवम अजिगर्ताम सुताम आह ज्येष्ठ एष प्रकालपयपताम। विश्वामित्र एक्सेप्टेड द सन ऑफ अजिगर्ता नोन एज सुनेशेप हु वाज बॉर्न इन द भृगु डायनेस्टी एंड वाज आल्सो नोन एज देवव्रत एज वन ऑफ हिज ओन सन्स। विश्वामित्र ऑर्डर्ड हिज अदर सन्स टू एक्सेप्ट सुनेशेप एज देयर एल्डर ब्रदर। टेक्स्ट 31, यो वै हरिश्चंद्र चंद्रमखे विक्रीत पुरुष पशु स्तुत्वा देवान प्रजेस साधिन मुमुचे पाश बांधनात। सुनिशेपा's father sold सुनिशेपा to be sacrificed as a man animal in the yagya of King Harishchandra. When Sunishepa was brought into the sacrificial arena, he prayed to the demigods for release and was released by their mercy. Here, purport by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Here is a description of Sunishepa. When Harishchandra was to sacrifice his son Rohita, Rohit arranged to save his own life by purchasing Sunishepa from Sunishepa's father to be sacrificed in the yagya. Sunishepa was sold to Maharaj Harishchandra because he was the middle son between the oldest and the youngest. It appears that the sacrifice of a man as an animal in yagya has been practiced for a very long time. Hare Krishna. Lot of translations and lot of concepts, lot of stories in this few purports, few verses. What we will try to do, since the discussions might go in various directions, is that we will try to focus on a few themes which are mentioned in these verses, and we will try to discuss those themes and see how, what lessons and what understanding we can derive from those themes. The first theme that we can discuss is the theme of Parashuram, where there is a description of the Parashuram incarnation of the Lord in a very interesting way here. It is said, Rama Kamala Lochana. Generally, this word Kamala Lochana is spoken about a personality who is having lotus-eyed and whose eyes are very beautiful. And generally, the lotus is associated with something that is soft. And here, the same lotus-eyed nature of the eyes is associated with Parashuram, which actually appears very contradictory to his personality. Because Parashuram's personality is something that can burn a lotus. He has a fiery tendency. And why is Parashuram's eyes being compared to Kamala Lochan? Why is it being compared to Kamala Lochan? We will see that first. And then we'll study the nature of Parashuram also. Is Parashuram actually an angry young man, and what he did was just a burst of his anger, or was it something else? This is the first thing we will try to understand. And then we will try to understand the concept of Parashuram being a Kshatriya and then transforming, being a Brahmana and then transforming into a Kshatriya. So the qualities of different personality. Is he a split person? Is he a Brahmana at some point of time and a Kshatriya at some point of time? Is split personality allowed in the scriptures? We will see that. And then we will see a third personality called Vishwamitra, where Vishwamitra again seems to be a person who wants to change his personality completely. He was born as Kshatriya and he wants to become a Brahmana. So we will see his story. What was that one incident which instigated him from giving up his nature of being a Kshatriya and wanting to be a Brahmana? And then we will also see in the end this concept of Harishchandra, the sacrifice, how he was ready to sacrifice his own son, and what is this concept of exchange of human beings in sacrifice. We'll discuss these three or four concepts according to what time permits. And I will also try to describe the beauty of the Lord. There is one pastime in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam when Lord Krishna is entering into Dwaraka. There is a great description of the beauty of the Lord in that pastime. We will try to describe that also at some point of time. Of course, I would like to honestly tell you all that it's not a very structured and prepared class, but because I've got 1 minute notice to prepare for this class. So it's not a really big amount of time to really prepare and speak. But whatever comes out will come out. So the first thing about Parikshit Maharaj, Parashuram, here the discussion is about the whole pastime of Parashuram killing 21 Akshonis, 21 generations of Kshatriyas is mentioned. And after killing so many thousands and thousands and millions of Kshatriyas, there are descriptions in the previous pages of the Bhagavatam where it is mentioned that Parashuram, when he was killing, rivers of blood was flowing and the heads would appear like turtle, the heads of turtles, and the arms would appear like waves. So there are a lot of descriptions of ghastliness of Parashuram's activities in the previous pages of the Bhagavatam. And here is a very contradictory description of the beauty of Parashuram, lotus-eyed one. So we will try to talk about that, and we'll try to discuss the nature of Parashuram's qualities. Parashuram, we should understand that he is an empowered incarnation of the Lord, Shaktavesh Avatar, where he specifically come for a certain task. And generally, the Lord, when he appears for a certain task, he performs a task and goes away. Like you'll find many incarnations of the Lord coming very specifically for a certain task. Like when Narasingadev appeared, he appeared for a few hours. And within those few hours, whatever he needed to do, he did and went away. So his whole duration of time of his appearance was just for a few hours practically. And within that duration of time, he hardly showed any love. He's most of the time his, the action that he showed was of prominently anger. And very less time he showed love, once when he licked Prahlad Maharaj. And after licking Prahlad Maharaj, again his anger exhibited. So his exhibition of love was very little. You'll find in Varahadev's appearance also, Varahadev showed at least few more emotions, When Varahadev was fighting with Hiranyaksha, Hiranyaksha at some point of time gave Varahadev bad words. So Varahadev showed emotion of feeling bad. So he exhibited one more emotion also, along with the anger. And so he showed that even God feels bad when he is blasphemed, right? And then Varahadev, he killed Hiranyaksha and goes away. But here in Parashuram's incarnation, we find that Parashuram is mainly there to annihilate the Kshatriya dynasty. And you will find that the trigger for his incarnation to manifest its original activity is that the killing of his father, Jamadagni. When the Kshatriyas, headed by Kartavirya Arjuna's sons, they killed Jamadagni, that instigated his Kshatriya spirit. And he gave up his Brahmanical tendency. He said, there's no use of practicing Brahmanical tendency now. What they need is the axe. And he picked up his chopper and killed millions of Kshatriyas. And once he felt, after 21 generations of Kshatriyas were killed, he felt that now there is a good chance there will be good governance. There will be a good chance that there will be stable Kshatriya race. Then he decided, I am no more needed. This role of mine is no more needed. And he went back to the Mahendra Parvat and he performed tapasya. And of course, it is mentioned here that he is still living as an intelligent Brahmana in the Mahendra Parvat. And there was one more time when Parashuram appears back from the Mahendra Parvat down. At this point of time, when he goes to the Mahendra Parvat, he gives up his chopper, he gives up his arms, and he says that, I'm never going to take up my arms again. I'm going and practicing the life of renunciation, of a Brahmanical life. And he goes to Mahendra Parvat. But at one point of time, Parashuram returns back. That point of time was appears in the Ramayana when Lord Ram, he actually picks up that bow of Lord Shiva. And when he picks up the bow and he tries to string it, the bow breaks. And when the sound of the bow is heard, that sound is so powerful that the whole universe trembles with that sound. And Parashuram, sitting in some corner of Mahendra Parvat, he hears the sound of a bow breaking. And the moment he hears the sound of a bow breaking, what Parashuram realizes is that there is one more Kshatriya who is powerful enough, who is born, and who can probably destroy the universe, who can probably create a havoc to the Brahminical community. He said, I have to deal with that fellow. And he comes all the way trying to search who the Kshatriya is and trying to see if that person is actually qualified to handle that power. This was typically the problem that Parashuram had with Kshatriyas. Parashuram never had a problem that Kshatriyas were powerful. Parashuram's problem was the power that the Kshatriyas were bestowed upon, can they handle that power? This is the quality of a person who can truly be a visionary. Generally, the quality of a Kshatriya, of a good, capable Kshatriya, is that he has a Brahminical intelligence which guides him, which gives him the direction. And when that Brahminical intelligence is not there, then only the power remains. And when the power is an uncontrolled power, naturally the tendency of the power is to misuse, is to utilize. Just like, you know, there is a story in the Srimad Bhagavatam, I think mostly in the 9th canto only, where there is one very saintly person who is staying in a forest, and Indra, he is very disturbed by his saintly nature. Naturally, Indra many times gets offended, gets bewildered when people become very, very powerful and very, very strong. And Indra, he decides that I have to handle this person's power. So he finds a very unique way of handling this sage's power. What he does is that he comes to the sage and he gives him a sword. He tells him, I'm just going to drink some water. Can you hold this sword for some time and take care of this sword? And he goes away. So this sage is a simple saintly man who has nothing to do with anything Kshatriya tendencies, but he has a sword in his hand. But because he has a sword in his hand, he knows that he has a duty to protect that sword. He has to, you know, take care of the sword. And being a Brahmana, being a typical of a Brahminical mentality, he's always scared that what if somebody comes and takes it away? What if I'm not able to keep my promise? So he always holds the sword in his hand. And then because he's holding the sword in his hand, sword means power. And power means it has to be used in some way. So the sage thinks, why don't I just try using the sword and see if it works? And he tries, and by mistake kills some living entity. And then, you know, when he kills the living entity, he feels bad, but then he experiences a power. He experiences a certain strength. And then, just by experiencing of that strength, he gets so intoxicated that he goes around killing so many people. And then completely he loses his tendency of a Brahmana and he becomes a Kshatriya. And Indra achieves his goal. You know, and he comes and takes back the sword at some point of time when this person has completely lost his powers and Brahminical tendencies. So naturally, when there is power, if the power is not guided in the right direction, that power has to be misused. Therefore, Parashuram was worried. There is a power, great source of power, because I've heard the sound. And that sound can't be anything but the breaking of the bow of Lord Shiva. And if somebody has the power to break the bow of Lord Shiva, then that person has to be a powerful Kshatriya. And if he is a powerful Kshatriya, is he capable of handling that power? That's what Parashuram wants to test. And therefore, he comes down all the way running. And of course, the power of the bow of Lord Shiva is mentioned. Actually, there are two bows, actually. The first bow is the bow of Lord Shiva. And the second bow is of Lord Vishnu. Lord Shiva uses his bow during the Daksha Yajna, when, you know, Lord Shiva is insulted by Daksha Prajapati and his wife commits sati. His wife burns herself in fire and she dies. Lord Shiva is extremely angry at Daksha and he wants to annihilate the whole dynasty of Daksha. And he comes with this bow. You know, he comes with this powerful bow. And he uses that bow to destroy. And at the end of that fight, Lord Shiva gets pacified and, you know, everything gets settled down. Daksha gets the head of a goat. Things get settled down. And then finally, Lord Shiva says, you know, he gives his bow to Lord Brahma. He says, you take care of this bow. And then Lord Vishnu also has a similar bow, which he uses in another fight. And then Vishnu hands over his own bow to Lord Brahma. And now Brahma has two bows in his hand. One Lord Vishnu's bow and one Lord Shiva's bow. And Lord Shiva's bow, what Brahmaji does, he hands it over to Janak Maharaj's ancestors. And then slowly it comes down to Janak Maharaj. And Lord Vishnu's bow, Brahmaji hands it over to Parashuram. And Parashuram has Lord Vishnu's bow. And now when Janak is having this bow, the situation that arises is that he wants to get his daughter married. But then one fine day, he finds that Mother Sita, she's brooming the floor, you know, just like well-thought girl. She's brooming the floor in her father's house. And suddenly, while brooming the floor, this bow comes in between. So she has a broom in her right hand, she's brooming, and she just lifts up the bow in her left hand, and she brooms below the bow and keeps it down. When Janak Maharaj sees that, he gets completely surprised. His anxiety starts increasing because he realizes that my daughter is so powerful that she can crush her husband if the husband is weak, you know. If she can lift the bow with her left hand, that bow to move, it required, in some places it is mentioned 60,000 men to move, and some places mentioned 5,000 powerful men to move. But anyway, 60 or 5,000, but still, it's that powerful. So Mother Sita could do it with her left hand, so Janak had to find somebody more powerful than her to be able to handle. So that's why he kept this Swayamvar, and none of the people who could come actually could handle the bow. And of course, Lord Ram, because he had the right attitude and the right blessings, he could handle it. And when he lifted the bow, of course, I'll not get into the details of that story, but when he lifts the bow and breaks it, Parashuram hears the sound. And after the whole marriage of Mother Sita with Lord Ram and Lakshman with the other sisters of Sita happened, they are returning back to Ayodhya with the whole entourage of Dasharatha Maharaj. And while returning back, they hear the huge uproar. They hear, you know, dust raising in the air. They hear all kinds of birds going in the wrong direction. So Dasharatha Maharaj realizes that there are a lot of ill omens happening and there's something wrong going to happen. But Vasishtha, at that point of time, he comes and tells Dasharatha, he interprets. He says that there is going to be some ill omen, but don't worry. Your son will be able to overcome it very easily. Vasishtha predicts it. And then Parashuram appears. So there is a history of Dasharatha Maharaj and Parashuram in the past. Therefore, when Dasharatha Maharaj sees Parashuram, he starts shivering literally. He starts literally shivering. The history is that Parashuram, during the time, you know, just before he retired from his killing of the Kshatriyas, he was roaming around all over India, all over the world practically, annihilating Kshatriyas. And he had two conditions that he will not touch Kshatriyas. The first condition was that if anybody is surrounded by women, he will not touch that person. And second condition was that if anybody is getting married, any Kshatriya is getting married and he is sitting on the, you know, marriage kund, then he will not touch the Kshatriya. These are the two conditions. There was one king whose name was Narikavach. Whenever Parashuram would come, he would surround himself with naked women and Parashuram would not come to him. So that was his trick. And Dasharatha Maharaj, when he would hear that Parashuram is coming, he would, you know, get some queen and get married to her. So he had about 353 queens like that. So every time Parashuram would come, Dasharatha Maharaj would be sitting in the marriage kund. So therefore, you know, so he had a history when he heard the name Parashuram. And when he saw that person, powerful, huge, with a big flowing beard and with his famous Parashu axe, which he killed millions of Kshatriyas with, and the blood was still dripping, Dasharatha Maharaj realized that this person is come to harm my son now. So he starts trembling. He tells Parashuram, he tells him that, oh my dear sir, he tells him the same thing. He tells him, we have heard that you have given up your weapons. We have heard that you have given up your Kshatriya quality and have become a Brahmana again. Why have you come here? Have you forgotten your vows? Dasharatha Maharaj is reminding Parashuram. And Parashuram, he tells him, don't worry, I have not forgotten my vows. But I have realized that there is somebody very powerful here. And he tells him that Lord Shiva's bow was already a broken bow.
Therefore, anybody can break it. If somebody can break Lord Shiva's bow, I'm not surprised. Because already, because of the wars, it was already broken. He said, I want to test the person who has broken Lord Shiva's bow. I have Vishnu's bow with me. If he can hold Vishnu's bow in his hand, then I accept that he is very powerful. And because he is powerful, he is capable of fighting with me. He said, I want to fight with such a person, Parashuram says. So now Dasharatha is perplexed. He knows that Rama has power, but he also knows that Parashuram is very powerful. And Dasharatha tells him that if you want to fight, I'll fight with you to satisfy you. Don't talk to my son. My son is not even 16 years old. You know, he's not even a fully grown boy. Parashuram says, nothing doing. I'm only talking to Lord Ram now. And he challenges Lord Ram. And Lord Ram, the first thing he tells him is that Kshatriyas don't speak, they act. And Ram, you know, just pulls out the bow from Parashuram's hand and strings it and pulls out the arrow from Parashuram's hand and he puts the arrow on the bow. And he tells Parashuram, now I put the arrow. You tell me where to shoot it. He tells him, should I shoot it at your legs and make your legs unmovable? You can never move from any place once I shoot your legs. Or should I shoot all your tapasya that you have done all these years? So Parashuram tells him that please don't shoot my legs. You can shoot your arrow at all my tapasya. Whatever tapasya I have done all my life, shoot your arrows at that. And I am ready to burn my tapasyas for your sake. Because Parashuram realizes that anybody who can hold the bow of Lord Vishnu like that has to be Vishnu. And then he realizes that though he himself is an incarnation of Lord Vishnu, he himself is the Lord, he realizes that that point of time is Lord Ram's incarnation. And his incarnation is over now. You know? So the power in Lord Ram is much more than the power in himself. So he realizes that he is no more the main incarnation of the Yuga, but Lord Ram is. And then he surrenders to Lord Ram. And then when Lord Ram is pacified, he shoots the arrow and burns away all the tapasya of Parashuram. Parashuram returns back to Mahendra Parvat peacefully, completely satisfied. And then Dasharatha Maharaj becomes happy and they continue further. And the Srimad Bhagavatam now at this point of time turns its story a little towards another personality called Vishwamitra Muni, who is another very interesting personality in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And of course, Vishwamitra Muni is the most prominent person in the Balakand of Ramayana, because the whole canto of the Ramayana, the Balakand, is named after Vishwamitra Muni actually, because most people think that Balakand means the childhood pastimes of Lord Ram, but actually if you analyze the whole of Balakand, there are only 10 verses which describe the childhood of Lord Ram. The Balakanda probably has about 1,000 or maybe even more, 2,000 verses. And out of the 2,000 verses, there are just 10 verses which describe the childhood pastime of Lord Ram. So what childhood are they talking about? You know, what childhood is Balakanda talking about? The childhood that Balakanda is talking about is this story of Vishwamitra, which is mentioned in just one verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Here Vishwamitra's story is mentioned that Vishwamitra, the son of Maharaj Gadi, was as powerful as the flames of fire. From the position of a Kshatriya, he achieved the position of a powerful Brahmana by undergoing penances and austerities. And if we actually hear this narration of the change of Vishwamitra from the Kshatriya order to the Brahmanical order, you understand that this is quite an ego game. Quite an ego game. Ultimately, the Varnashram system is designed in such a way that each one practices his nature, the qualities that are suitable to his own nature. We are not prescribed to practice something that is not our nature. Therefore, Krishna tells Arjun in the Gita that it is better to do one's own prescribed duty, even if it is faultily, than doing another's duty perfectly. Right? So here was Vishwamitra trying to be a Brahmana while his nature, innate nature, was a Kshatriya. And then he realizes his flaw. So quickly, I'll just summarize the story of Vishwamitra, which will give us such powerful lessons for our own lives. It shows how Vishwamitra's life typically shows the growth of a sadhaka from being an egomaniac to being a fully surrendered bhakta, fully surrendered devotee of the Lord, from being somebody who wants to achieve some big post in his life to being somebody who is satisfied with the smile of the Lord. This is the story of Vishwamitra, actually, in short. Just to put it in more words, Vishwamitra, at one point of time, he was a very powerful king. He had about 101 sons. There is a great detail of the story mentioned in the Shrimad, in the Ramayana, and the context in which the story is mentioned is amazing, actually. Because what happens is that Vishwamitra takes Lord Ram and Lakshman along with him to the forest in the pretext of training them. So he fights with Dasharath Maharaj. There is a big conversation with Dasharath, and he somehow, you know, by hook or crook, convinces Dasharath and forcefully takes Ram and Lakshman along with him. And while they're in the forest, there are very interesting things that happened. I'll just tell you a few of the things, and then I'll come to the story of Vishwamitra, which will give us the whole context of Vishwamitra's life. When Vishwamitra takes Ram and Lakshman along with him, the first thing that happens is that they come to this forest where this demoness Taraka is staying. And Vishwamitra makes Lord Ram kill Taraka. And of course, I'll not get into the details of Taraka's story, but when Lord Ram kills Taraka and she dies, after that, Vishwamitra, he becomes very impressed with Lord Ram and Lakshman. And he bestows upon them two very powerful weapons known as Bala and Atibala. These two weapons actually are not just weapons, they are mantras. If anybody chants these mantras, it is mentioned that that person will never face hunger, thirst, or a lack of energy in his life. And also, when a person chants his mantras, his bodily luster increases unlimited times. And any person who sees him, any enemy who sees him, he starts fearing, starts trembling. And of course, these mantras also give the power to that person to recall any weapon, any missile, any kind of missile at will. So Vishwamitra first bestowed upon them the Atibala and Bala Shaktis. Remember that these are the powers that Vishwamitra has gained over years and years of tapasya. These are the strengths that Vishwamitra has gained. And all the strength of weapons Vishwamitra bestows upon Lord Ram and Lakshman. And then they walk further. And they reach the Siddhashram. Siddhashram has a history of its own. Lord Vishnu has meditated in Siddhashram for thousands of years. I'll not get into details of that. Even Vishwamitra in the Siddhashram, he performs this yajna where all these, you know, demons are coming and throwing all kinds of abominable substances. And Lord Ram and Lakshman, they protect the yajna of Vishwamitra. There is a very interesting description of how Ram and Lakshman protect the yajna of Vishwamitra. That's why Ramayana is a very poetic description. Therefore, it is described in a very poetic way. It is mentioned that the eyes, we have two eyelids, the upper eyelids and lower eyelids. If you observe carefully, the lower eyelids don't move. The upper eyelids move up and down. And the upper and the lower eyelids together protect the eyeballs, which is the treasure. So it is described that when Vishwamitra is performing the yajna in the center, he was like the eyeball, which had to be protected. And Lord Ram and Lakshman were the two eyelids. And Lord Ram stationed Lakshman at the gate of the yajna, at the gate of the yajna. And he told Lakshman, you don't move from here. And Lord Ram himself would circumambulate the whole yajna. So it is appearing as if the eyelids were closing and eyelids were opening. And eyelids were closing and eyelids were opening. And protecting the yajna in the between. And at some point of time, Lord Ram would go and touch Lakshman. As if the upper eyelids were touching the lower eyelids. Lord Ram would touch Lakshman and tell him, be ready. Anytime the enemies will come. So this is a very poetic description of how the Ram and Lakshman were protecting the yajna. And when they protected the yajna, after the yajna was protected, Vishwamitra gained a lot of siddhis by the power of the yajna. And when he completed the yajna, Vishwamitra handed over all the siddhis which he acquired through his meritorious sacrifices to Lord Ram and Lakshman. And then finally, Vishwamitra takes him, of course, they deliver Ahilya in between. the understanding of Ahilya is that Ahilya, see, she committed this crime of enjoying with Indra while Gautam Rishi was still there. Because Indra, of course, Indra had the bad intention, so he dressed as Gautam Rishi and came to Ahilya. And Ahilya, she knew that it was Indra, but still, because of weakness of the mind, and because she had this tendency to enjoy, she did that act of enjoying with Indra. And when Gautam Rishi came, he got angry. And of course, he cursed Indra differently, but he cursed Ahilya differently. He cursed Ahilya that she would become a stone. And there's a very interesting reason why he cursed her to become a stone. The reason is that stone is inert, insensitive. A person who tries to enjoy sense gratification, who has a spirit of enjoying sense gratification, he becomes inert to what is right and wrong. Therefore, Ahilya has the mentality of the stone at that point of time, where she didn't know what was right and wrong. She couldn't discriminate. She lost the power of discrimination. That is what sense gratification does to a human being. When sense gratification comes in a very powerful way, especially in a time when nobody is around, nobody is there to watch, that time you lose your sense of discrimination. And then your mind, your heart becomes like a stone. And therefore, Gautam Rishi cursed her. You don't deserve to be a human being. You deserve to be a stone. And he cursed her to be a stone. And she became a stone. And when Lord Ram came and touched the stone. That's what he did. He didn't do anything else. By the touch of Lord Ram's legs, the inert stone got back to life. Which means that when the lotus feet of the Lord enters into somebody's life, even if your heart is as hard as a stone, even if your heart is as insensitive as a stone, there is hope. And that's what Lord Ram signified by coming and touching Ahilya. And to touch Ahilya, he came out of his way. It's not that it was on the way of his journey. He went out of his way. So therefore, the mercy of the Lord, when the Lord wants to give mercy to a certain living entity, he is ready to go out of his way to give mercy. And then after delivering Ahilya, when they reached Mithila, before the marriage, they met a personality called Satananda Rishi. And this Satananda Rishi was the son of Ahilya and Gautam. And when Vishwamitra introduced Ram and Lakshman to Satananda Rishi, he introduced them saying that these two personalities have brought back your mother from stone to life. And they have united Gautam Rishi and Ahilya. So when Satananda Rishi heard that, he became extremely jubilant because his mother and father were united after thousands and thousands of years. And then he was very joyful and very grateful to them. And then he realized the cause of his mother and father being united was Vishwamitra. And then he wanted to glorify Vishwamitra. And that was the time when he actually narrated this story of Vishwamitra, the whole life of Vishwamitra. This is where the first narration of Vishwamitra's story comes in the scriptures. And just imagine his situation. He's telling the story of Vishwamitra in front of Vishwamitra. And Vishwamitra is an angry man. If the story is told in the wrong way, if it conveys the wrong meaning, Vishwamitra can curse. If the story is told in the wrong way, Lord Ram and Lakshman have developed solid faith in Vishwamitra by now. They consider Vishwamitra to be their spiritual master. They consider Vishwamitra to be their worshipable object. If Satananda Rishi tells the story of Vishwamitra and Vishwamitra feels bad, or Lord Ram and Lakshman feels bad, again, it's a ruination of the whole mood, right? So Satananda Rishi had to tell the story as it is, without any changes, but without hurting any of their feelings. This is expertise in storytelling. This is expertise in storytelling. And this is expertise in being sensitive. So we can learn sensitivity from the Ramayana. How, when in a situation where you're told to tell the truth, but you have to tell the truth in such a way that it is palatable to everyone. That's an art. Satananda Rishi managed to tell the story in front of Vishwamitra. When I'm telling you the story, you'll understand how difficult it must have been for him to tell the story. And without offending Vishwamitra. The story in short was that Vishwamitra, he was a Kshatriya, and he happened to go to the house of hermitage of Vasishtha Muni. And Vasishtha Muni was a very powerful Brahmana. And Vishwamitra was a king, and he had about 60-70,000 of his entourage with him at that point of time. And when he went to Vasishtha Ashram, Vasishtha welcomed him. He told him, come and sit, we want to serve you. So Vishwamitra said, you're a poor man. I'm just happy with your friendship. I don't want any service from you. And Vasishtha said, no, I want to serve you. He made everyone sit. And he called his cow, Sabala. And he told the cow to serve all of them, a big feast. And the cow actually single-handedly served a huge feast, unlimited feast to every soldier of Vishwamitra. And everyone was thoroughly satisfied. And when the soldiers of Vishwamitra saw the power of this cow, they were totally fascinated. And here began the problem. The ego of a person who wants the best comes up. And here Vishwamitra exhibits that ego by saying that, I want the cow. I am the king. The king deserves the best of everything. So just give me the cow. I will give you 1,000,000 cows in return. And I'll give you unlimited gold in return. So Vasishtha said, I don't want unlimited gold and wealth. I only want this cow. Why? Very clear. Objective was very clear. His objective was that I want to use this cow for serving the guests and for my sacrifice. So he had no other objective. Vishwamitra had a very clear objective. He wanted to use that cow for his personal enjoyment. So this was a conflict between the mindset of a Kshatriya and the mindset of a Brahmana. So Vishwamitra said, I will kill you if you don't give me the cow. He said, I don't care. You can't take the cow. So Vishwamitra forcibly started dragging Sabala away. And Sabala started crying. She started crying. She told Vasishtha, you are my master. You're supposed to protect me. Why are you not protecting me? Vasishtha said, I am a Brahmana. And this fellow is a Kshatriya. He has so much power. You protect yourself. So once Sabala got the instruction to protect itself, what it did? It just made one big shout from its mouth. And as soon as Sabala shouted, thousands of soldiers manifested. And they started destroying Vishwamitra's soldiers. Vishwamitra got bewildered. He never expected that. And then Vishwamitra's soldiers attacked the Sabala's soldiers. And then Sabala got more soldiers out of his body. And then eventually everyone in Vishwamitra's army was destroyed except Vishwamitra. So Vishwamitra realized that I am helpless in front of this cow. Let me go and do something and come back. So he went and he gathered a huge army and came back to attack. And then again he was defeated thoroughly. Then he got a realization. He said that I have to gain some power by tapasya. So he went and started doing tapasya. He gave his kingdom to his first son and he went and started doing tapasya. For thousands of years he did tapasya. He got powers of unlimited weapons, you know, as a result of his tapasya, and he came back. And he came back and he challenged Vasishtha. He said, now I have got unlimited power to kill you. I'm going to kill you. And he started shooting thousands of arrows at Vasishtha. And Vasishtha, he held his Brahmadanda. And the Brahmadanda absorbed all those arrows that Vishwamitra shot. So Vishwamitra is completely bewildered. He shot the Brahmastra. That was the most powerful weapon he ever had. By the power of the Brahmadanda, even the Brahmastra got absorbed. And then Vishwamitra realized that Kshatriya power is nothing compared to Brahmanical power. So he said, my goal of life is to become a Brahmarishi. Unless I become a Brahmarishi, I will not be satisfied. So Vishwamitra, see this is just an ego game, basically. You know, wherever my ego is satisfied, that is what I want to become. If as a Kshatriya my ego is satisfied, I am happy. If Kshatriya doesn't satisfy my ego, I want to become a Brahmana. This is what the tendency of a living entity is, trying to achieve something that is not possible. So Vishwamitra goes and tries to become Brahmarishi. He does thousands of years of more tapasya. And then Brahmaji comes and he tells him, you have become a Rishi now. So he says, no, I want to become Brahmarishi. He says, this is not enough. You have to do more tapasya. So he says, okay, let me do more tapasya. And then at that point of time, Indra, he gets agitated. Just see the nature of this world. One person tries to do something, another person gets agitated. Third person tries to do something else, a fourth person gets agitated. This world is just meant for pulling down each other. No one wants each other to grow. So Indra sent Menaka and he sends her to allure Vishwamitra Muni. Thousands of years of tapasya has already been done by Vishwamitra Muni, and then Menaka comes. And one tinkling of the bell of Menaka is enough to disturb Vishwamitra Muni. He forgets all his tapasya and he enjoys with Menaka for 10 years. And after 10 years, he realizes that he has made a mistake. And by that time, all his power of tapasya which he had gathered had all gone away. So he said, this is nonsense. Let me go back. And he starts doing tapasya again for thousands of years. And after thousands of years of tapasya, then Brahmaji comes. And he tells him, now you have become a Maharishi. You have not become a Brahmarishi. You become little higher than just a Rishi. And then Brahmaji, he disappears. And then Vishwamitra is still not satisfied. He's still continuing tapasya. And then Indra sends Ramba. And Vishwamitra realizes, I am not supposed to hear the ankling bell. You know, no lust, no calm, no calm, no calm. He's repeating this. And then he says, if anybody comes who's tried to agitate me, I'll see what to do. And then Ramba comes by mistake. And that's her misfortune. And then as soon as she comes, he knows. He has learned the mantra. No calm, no lust. And as soon as he sees Ramba, he burns her to ashes with his curse. And then he realizes that I didn't succumb to calm, I didn't succumb to lust, but I succumbed to anger. So then again all the power of his tapasya for thousands of years has gone away. Then he says, okay, wait, let me not get agitated. Let me be calm. And then again sits and starts doing tapasya, thousands of years more. And then finally Brahmaji comes. And he tells him, what do you want? He tells him, I want to become a Brahmarishi. Brahmaji says, okay, you become Brahmarishi. So just out of desperation, Brahmaji makes him a Brahmarishi. And then just see the ego. Still, after becoming Brahmarishi also, ego is not satisfied. Vishwamitra tells Brahmaji, I am not satisfied if you tell me I have become Brahmarishi. Vasishta should come and tell me that I have become Brahmarishi. Only then I will be satisfied. So Brahmaji goes and calls Vasishta. Tell him that he has become Brahmarishi. So Vasishta tells him, I am happy that you have become Brahmarishi. So Vishwamitra's ego is completely pacified. I have become as equal as Vasishta. But the ego is not gone. And then this is where Vishwamitra's life is right now. Where he becomes a Brahmarishi. Powerful. Everyone in the universe recognizes him as a Brahmarishi. And then he realizes that he still has to grow. He still has to elevate himself. And then that is the point when he goes to Lord Ram's palace. He meets Dasharath Maharaj and tells Dasharath that please hand over your son to me. And of course Dasharath opposes and he exhibits his anger and, you know, tries to get Ram away. So but when he gets Ram, he realizes that my goal of my life is to serve this person. And then he hands over all his siddhis, all the powers that he has got over thousands of years of tapasya, he starts handing over one by one. He hands over the bala and ati bala. He hands over his siddhis. He hands over all the mystic powers that he has to Lord Ram. And then one night when Lord Ram is sleeping and early morning the next day, Vishwamitra gets up earlier than Lord Ram. He sees the beauty of Lord Ram's face. When he sees the beauty of Lord Ram's face, there arises within his heart such a pure love for the Lord. Such a pure love for the Lord, which is untinged with any contamination of hankering of power, hankering of the ego, hankering of things. He tells, he sings and he prays to the Lord, Kaushalya Supraja Rama Purva Sandhya Pravartate. When he utters the word Kaushalya, he remembers that this form of the Lord, of Lord Ram sleeping, nobody in the universe can see except one person, Mother Kaushalya. And he says, that lady is so fortunate that every night when Lord Ram is sleeping, she can look at him. And he says, I am having that fortune of seeing the face of Lord Ram. And then he glorifies like this, Lord Ram. And then slowly he hands over Lord Ram and he marries Lord Ram and Mother Sita. And at the marriage of Lord Ram and Mother Sita, Vishwamitra steps out of Lord Ram's life. And he walks to the Himalayas, to the north. Never to come back again into the scene of the Ramayana. Never to come back. Why? Because he has attained the perfection of his life. And he has attained what is called as Balapan. That means, from being a Kshatriya, to become a Rishi, Maharishi, Brahmarishi, to become a small child. A child in Bhakti Yoga. This is what Lord Vishwamitra attains at the end of the Ramayana, practically, end of the Balakand. He becomes a small child, realizing that the beginning of his spiritual life is now, in remembrance of Lord Ram. And then he says, all my accumulated powers I have given away to Lord Ram, who is my object of surrender, and I'm surrendering my life to Lord Ram. and he spends the rest of his life in the Himalayas meditating on this form of the Lord. This is Balak, the childhood of Vishwamitra. So we see that when you want to analyze Vishwamitra, personalities like these, Vishwamitra and Parashuram, we have to understand that it's not just that these personalities are, you know, externally very powerful, externally seeming to be very, very, they can practically shake the whole world. But still, within that power, within the aura of their life, is a small spark of devotion, which is just like within all of us. In that sense, we are also struggling, like Vishwamitra, with our egos, which claim us to be big Brahmarishis, if not Brahmarishis, at least to be, you know, some whatever post we can try to come up to. And that ego sometimes acts as a barrier. When we have those our skills as different siddhis, our beauty, our wealth, our fame, which are all different barriers in our lives. And when these barriers come between us and the Lord, they act as impediments in us clearly seeing the Lord and us being able to enjoy the beauty of the Lord. And when we start giving up those barriers and using those barriers in shelter of the Lord, in the service of the Lord, then we find that our devotion, which is like a small child within our heart, comes up and we can worship the Lord better. Thank you very much. If there is any comment or question we can take up, we can end here. Next. Yeah, it's good. Thank you for the nice comment. Hare Krishna. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada.